Good morning. I don't know about you, but for some reason, May felt really long, and I'm really happy that it's June. And I was thinking that maybe it has something to do with like the years and years we spend in school, and it's like summer, even though it doesn't really mean anything when you're an adult. To get us started today, I would like you to consider the question of what is the first thing you hear when you wake up, usually? Any volunteers? What do you hear? I hear a child crying. I hear birds. An alarm. Classic. Cats? Any dogs? Dogs wake you up? A snoring dog. Yeah. These are the... Okay, a very specific type of alarm. These are all pretty predictable wake-up sounds. Most days I wake up to an alarm. I'm not one of those people. But on the days that I don't set an alarm, I get one in the form of my chickens. We keep them locked in their coop overnight. Those are them. And in the morning, they want to go out, and they want to roam around the yard. And so... this time of year, it's about 6:30 when I can start to hear them. And this is what they sound like. I'm considering making that my actual alarm clock on my phone. I love the sounds that my chickens make. They sound so desperate, but really they're fine. And my father-in-law was visiting not too long ago. He comes and he helps us out with projects around the house. He breaks things and then he fixes them. And he told me the other day that he really likes being out there with the chickens. There's something about their presence that he finds really soothing and comforting. And I've never felt more connected to my father-in-law in that moment, because I also find them to be really like a wonderful presence just to be around. So right now, I'm going to have us take a minute where I'd like to invite us all to just take a moment to listen. I want us to listen to the things that we hear, both in this room, outside of this room, and we're just going to be silent for just a moment and just notice the things that you hear. It's like the one Sunday where we don't have an ambulance or something going down the road. What are some of the things you heard? Breathing? I hear the projector, the motor on the projector. Babies? I know, this is like the one Sunday they're really quiet. Come on. Babies? Oh, the padding, like soothing the babies. That's a good sound. Oh, a little metaphysical inner yearning I heard. Yeah, mostly we hear the sweat falling from our our faces. Maybe when you're silent for a moment, you start to hear, you know, physically you hear things, but then also maybe you start to feel your body a little bit differently. Maybe you feel your chair, sitting in your chair, you feel your feet on the floor. We don't often notice a lot of ambient sound because, like, our brains literally tune it all out, because we'd get overwhelmed and not be able to function if we were constantly paying attention to every single sound we heard. But by inviting silence, by inviting times for silence, we're able to hear things that we wouldn't otherwise notice. And so that's kind of what we're going to talk about today. So I'd like us to talk today about how being present helps us hear God. As is our practice, we're going to read the text together this morning, and it comes from 1 Samuel. It should be up on the screens. So before Samuel gets to his stage of life where he's sleeping on the temple, on the floor of the temple, he was like a miracle baby. The earlier in the chapter, in the book, we learn that his mother, named Hannah, was really desperate to have a baby, and she would pray frequently at the temple and earnestly that she could have a baby. And on one such occasion, Eli saw her praying. He actually thought she was drunk because she was like so fervently praying. And once he realized she wasn't, he blessed her. And then that's when she conceived and had a baby and named him Samuel, which means God hears. She dedicated him to a life of service to the Lord, and he began to serve under Eli. Eli was a temple priest, but his sons were total failures. They were gallivanting in all the wrong ways, and probably really big disappointments to Eli. When I read this story, I was thinking Samuel was sort of like a redemptive chance for Eli to sort of have a son figure who could kind of follow in his way as well. The text says that I think I had a picture of Samuel. Yeah, just a little icon for visual treat. The text says that the word of the Lord was rare in those days, and visions were not widespread. At the time, Eli, whose eyesight had begun to grow dim so that he could not see, was lying in his room. The lamp of God had not yet gone out. Samuel was lying in the temple of the Lord where the ark of God was. Since there was a lamp burning, it was probably nighttime, and the text says that Samuel was laying down. There seems to be kind of a familiarity to this routine, like he does it a lot. In my imagination, it's very quiet in the temple. It's dark. He's alone. And in his work, his daily work, he's ministering to the Lord. Samuel is putting himself in service to the Lord under Eli. And then even while he's sleeping, he's putting himself in the presence of God. And it's in this state of rest that God comes to Samuel and God talks to Samuel. Being present in that space helped Samuel have the presence to hear God. It was simply the act of being present that made him open to listening. And I think this applies to us too. It's mostly like in hindsight or reflection that we can recognize specific patterns or feelings that we might have. It's only, for me personally, it's only through the work of doing therapy that I've learned to recognize like different voices in my head and the messages I'm hearing and telling myself even. For me, being alone, being still, being quiet, that's kind of hard for me. I'm not very good at it. And to give you an example, after I graduated college in 2007, I decided to join the Peace Corps. And the motto at the time for the Peace Corps was, "Adventure is calling, will you go?" And I was like, yes, yes, I will go. And so I went, and I went to Ukraine. In college, I had been very, high school too, I'd been very involved, active, clubs, yes, you know, activities, yes, let me do them all. And you know, I just had never really been that much alone and still. But when I moved to Ukraine, that changed a lot. The most terrifying moment of my whole life was when they dropped us off at our training sites. And I'm just like, it was. And then my second most terrifying moment was when I got dropped off in my permanent site for 2 years, where there's something about it that was just so terrifying, like all of a sudden being really alone. And I wasn't physically alone. I mean, I was in a community of people, but I was alone. Anyone who's ever worked, you know, like started a new job and eaten lunch in the break room, you know what I'm talking about. You're alone, right? And so I had to learn how to cope. I had to learn how to be alone. And mostly what I took on, I started cooking a fair bit. I loved cooking before, but then I was like, what about other things? So I started, Ukraine has peanuts, but they do not have peanut butter as a society. It just doesn't exist there. I don't know why. But I really love peanut butter. So I'd actually like try to take peanuts and like try to turn them into peanut butter. I used a rolling pin, a mortar and pestle. I used a coffee grinder. None of it worked. But that was like something I tried. And it was just trying to, in a way, fill the space. But I also really learned something kind of, something that I value now, which is that I got much more comfortable with just sort of being alone, being by myself, having less distraction, and kind of like being okay in that space and like the presence of myself. And even today, I kind of like look back on those times as like, what did I even do with all of my time? I had so much time. And I sort of miss that a little bit because it was simpler when I did have a lot more space. And I did feel a little more present, I think, sometimes. We hear, there's another story in the Bible where I think like being alone sort of helped someone reframe. It was Jonah and the whale. Jonah didn't want to go preach to these people. And so the story goes that God sent a whale to swallow him up for 3 days. And inside the whales where he had a change of heart. And then he did. He was able to sort of reframe how he was treating going to see these people. And so then he changed his mind and went. I think it was that isolation that sort of gave him the presence to think about it differently. That makes sense. Sometimes a physical place can help us find presence, and sometimes it's being alone in that place. For Samuel, he was lying down. He was being restful. He was silent. I'd like you to consider what places you find restful. Where do you find presence? For me, I found that when I get in my car to go somewhere, before I even turn the key, I'm right-handed, before I turn the key, I kind of take a deep breath in, and then I breathe out, and I count down from five, and then I turn the key, and then I go. And I don't know, that's like seriously probably the most grounded I feel all day long is just in those moments when I'm about to go somewhere and I just take that moment. I'd like to propose a spiritual practice this week of noticing a place where you can find presence to listen. Listen to your body, your thoughts, your feelings, your needs. Try to spend some time in that presence, that place this week. Maybe practice centering prayer. Or if there's something else that works for you, like yoga or exercise that helps you tune into that, I invite you to try doing that every day this week. Consider how you can find space for presence. When we pick back up with our story, Samuel has just gone to Eli, who told him to go back and lay down. A second time, Samuel hears his name called, and he thinks it's Eli. And the text says, Samuel got up and went to Eli and said, "Here I am, for you called me." But he said, "I did not call. Go lie down." Now Samuel did not yet know the Lord, and the word of the Lord had not yet been revealed to him. Eli was basically Samuel's mentor. Eli's sight had begun to fail, and he was probably relying more and more heavily on others like Samuel for help. And we can see that they have kind of a closeness. Samuel's first reaction when he hears his name is to go to Eli, and he's probably done this before. And as we see earlier in the chapter, it was sort of Eli's blessing that kind of caused Samuel to happen in the first place. So there's probably like that closeness, that responsibility in that relationship. But still, Samuel didn't yet know the voice of the Lord. I like the word yet because it implies this like eventuality. Like Samuel must have been working in the temple for years, you know, waiting for that other shoe to drop, waiting to be like called, you know? And then he hears the voice and he doesn't recognize it. And so then he kind of goes to Eli, who kind of helps him understand. I recently had an experience where I had to kind of take something on blind faith. So my husband, Tim, and I, he's the one playing bass up here. We visited South Africa, and We planned a day for hiking in what's called the Drakensberg Mountains. We chose this 8-mile hike. It's supposed to be pretty strenuous. And there's going to be some pictures. It was beautiful, if you can't tell. And their seasons are opposite. They're going into winter. Cold nights in the high desert, like there, and then also early sunsets, like at 6. So we got up to the top, and we put our feet in the waterfall. We were hanging out at the top, and it was just really nice, and yeah, that's where we were. And it was like 3:15. I was starting to get nervous, because we still had like a 2-hour hike back. And we, on the way up, the sole of Tim's boot had separated. Has anybody ever had this happen? The sole had separated from the shoe part, and it was just sort of clomping as he walked. And this was like only half of the hike, you know, had passed, so we still had quite a ways to get back. And we were really concerned about it falling off altogether, which would leave him basically shoeless for a 4-mile rocky hike back. So we saw this group of people, this group of hikers, and we went over there and we're like, maybe they have some duct tape or something. And there was a guide, a local guide, who was taking these people up. And he didn't have any duct tape, but he did have some cord, which he cut. And then I've got a photo of how Tim reconstructed his shoe back together. It actually got him through the rest of the hike. a miracle. But the guide sort of told us that just so, you know, 3:15-ish, and he says, before you go back, you should really go take a look. There's something called God's Window. Go up this hill. See that little, and he's like, these are the instructions we got. He's like, see that black, and it's like, you know, big hill. See that black strip of rock? Yeah, just go a little to the left and then go a little to the right and you'll see it. You'll see it. Has anybody ever gotten directions like that? Do you ever see it? No. And I'm horrible with directions. I was like real nervous. And I was like, okay, but are we going to have time before, you know, to get back before dark? Because I'm always worried about something and I'm always worried about time. So I was super worried that we wouldn't have enough time to get back. And he's like, yeah, you'll be fine. Just don't dilly-dally. Okay, we won't dilly-dally. And so we decided to go, and we trusted him, blind faith and all. And we went up, and we got a look through what they call God's Window. And it just like you just it's like this cut in the rocks, the way the rocks moved, however long ago. And you can climb kind of down in there, but you're standing on rocks that fell at one point. So what's to stop them from falling right now when I step onto them? You know, that kind of fear. But you got this like really beautiful view. And I'm so glad that we asked for help and that he like kind of went out of his way to tell us something else we could see. This guy who we don't even know his name, he sort of like helped us see something that we didn't even know existed past that weird black strip of rock. We did end up having to hike down in the dark a little bit towards the end there, and it was fine. I was so worried about it, but it was fine. And Tim's boot held together the whole rest of the trip, in fact, although it did raise a few eyebrows at airport security, and they did not like it very much. But there's so many occasions where we get help from people that we don't really expect. The story of Balaam and his donkey comes to mind. Balaam's this guy, he's riding his donkey. His donkey sees a angel of the Lord with a sword. Balaam doesn't see it. Balaam's like, go, and the donkey won't go. This happens 3 times. And then finally, like, the Lord reveals the angel to Balaam. And it was the donkey who said, no, I can't go. You don't understand. You'll get killed if I go. And so it's like these weird voices, like these unexpected places, I think, that when you kind of put yourself in a position of being present with others, it's these unexpected voices that can come to you and tell you something that you wouldn't otherwise know and show you something you wouldn't otherwise know. And I like that God surprises us with things like this. I like that God is not the voice of the thunderclap and the strong rushing wind. I like that God is the voice, the whisper. More and more, I experience God in like iterations of God in my experiences with other people or through other people. I experience God in like connections that I have when I can be present with other people. It like gives me so much clarity to like sit and talk with someone and then kind of come around to like understanding something different about myself or other people. And I think that those are the whisper moments that God gives me. Those times of presence with other people are what help me hear God in my own life. This week, I'd like to invite one more spiritual practice to consider who it is that you depend on. What need do they help you fill? How do they help you grow? Consider scheduling time with this person this week. Try to be fully present with that person. See where it goes. We'll finish our time together in scripture with the third time that the Lord calls to Samuel. It's the third time Samuel gets up, he goes to Eli, and he says, "Here I am," just as he had done before. And it's finally now, this third time around, that Eli gets it. Eli perceived that the Lord was calling the boy, the text said. It says, he told Samuel to go lay back down, that if the Lord calls again to say, "Speak, Lord, for your servant is listening." Samuel lay down again, and he did as was instructed. Sorry, I pushed the wrong thing. And it actually says something a little bit differently the third time. It says that the Lord came and stood with Samuel. It doesn't say that the first two. And I don't know if that's just a transcription thing, but I did notice it. And Samuel says, "Speak, for your servant is listening." It took Eli three instances of God calling for him to recognize that God was calling Samuel. Even he, who was a temple priest, took him a minute. But once he did, this is the time where Samuel becomes called. Like they call this the calling of Samuel. And he becomes a prophet. And remember, the visions were rare at the time. So this is a big deal. And I have to think that this must have come as such a huge relief to Eli, right? This is his little mentee. And to see this happen and to see that God has called his person. And then for Samuel, what a relief too. He spent his whole life in training for this. And then it finally happens. So in this moment, Eli is able to be present for Samuel. Samuel's able to be present to the Lord. Samuel gets called. One of my favorite things to do is to go on walks with good friends. It's my favorite. And I often walk Town Lake with a fellow Vox friend. You may know Liz. I have a picture. And her dog, Nash. A lot of love there. Sometimes I take Nash when Liz is at work and I take him for walks by myself. He's a good dog. And so we usually walk for a couple of hours, which is as long as it takes to have a good conversation. And one time we were walking, it was like towards the end of 2016. And she told me that instead of making a New Year's resolution, she sets an intention for the year. She uses a word to sort of like sum up what that intention will be. So that year, I decided to set an intention word. And you may remember 2016. There's a lot going on towards the end of it. kind of a full year, if you will. I decided that kind of in light of all of what was happening in 2016, my word was going to be voice. I've had a hard time speaking up before. And I was like, you know what? We're doing it. I felt like there was the metrics had changed. I needed to speak up. I needed to say something. And so I tried voice for 2017. And you probably know where I'm going with this. It didn't go very well, I have to admit. I tried voice at work, and I ended up kind of alienating someone I work with. I tried a voice in one of my like close circles of friends and kind of created a conflict that I just wasn't ready for. And what I finally realized towards the end of last year was I really wasn't ready. My expression of voice was me taking this energy that I had and pushing it outward. It wasn't invitational at all. It was not even invited. I was pushing my energy out. And I thought that's what I needed to be doing. And then what I realized was that it wasn't helping me. And I wasn't, that energy was only creating barriers. And it wasn't really helping me form connections. So what I realized I needed to do was pull that energy back. I needed to take it back. And I needed to direct it towards myself, towards the idea of rest. And I needed to be more present with the current moment, and I needed to be a better listener. And I didn't have any shame with that, which is, I think, a very big growing moment for me. But it was helpful to realize that I needed to pull back and rest. So that became my word for this year, is rest. When I'm getting stressed out or overwhelmed, I try to remind myself that rest is a spiritual practice. And I don't mean like a whole Sabbath. I mean just like a moment of rest as a spiritual practice. I don't always need to be doing something. I don't always need to be saying something. Sometimes just sitting back is all that's been asked of me. It definitely took me more than 3 instances of forcing my voice before I recognize that my calling in those moments is simply, at least for now, to rest. To simply hold still for one moment, breathe in, and say, here I am. And I think that maybe here I am is a calling. Maybe simply recognizing our need for presence, for acknowledging the here and now, is all that God really asks of us. That's the work that we can do sometimes. To simply breathe in, here I am, and breathe out. In closing, I'd like us to try sitting in silence again for just a moment. I'd like to invite you to settle in your seats. I'll time this again and encourage you to notice the sounds that you hear now. Notice the sensation of your body in this room. And I'd also like you to consider whether anything feels different from the first time when you were asked to sit in silence. If it's helpful to focus on the words, here I am, they are on the screen. Fox friends, I pray that this week you would find reminders to be present, to connect with yourself, to connect with those closest to you, and to recognize God's voice. I pray that by the grace of God, you will be able to respond, here I am. Amen.